On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we run through a wacky, wild, weird night in MLB. So much to pick from. A very odd Royals-Mets game. Ryan O'Hearn, 3 home runs. Otani, 300th home run. A righty hit lefty. Then we'll talk about Tarek Skubal. Update you on him and the trade situation. And then some all-star updates. Who's in the Derby? Just two people. That's it. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that thinks Shohei Ohtani should now try to give up 300 home runs. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman, the Dodgers' two-way dynamo. Clock number 300 last night at the plate. In order to reach that same number on the mound, he would have to allow 240 more home runs. Unlikely.
Yeah, that's going to take some time. He'd really have to start serving them up on purpose. And I don't sense that that is going to be something Shohei is going to be doing anytime soon on this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbacast. We react to just a regular old Tuesday in Major League Baseball. Our opener is drafting the craziest night of the regular season so far.
We will begin with a story. Last night, Jordan and I went and did pregame at Nats Park for Nats Astros. And I was planning on staying for last night's game. But then as I scrolled through the pitching matchups on the evening to be, I thought to myself, I'd rather watch 10 games at one time at my desk than one game in person at the yard. And so I packed up, began to leave, received a flurry of critiques from various other more committed media members sitting around me. Where are you going? You leaving so early? You know, the game starts at 6:30. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go home and watch a bunch of games. Jordan, boy, oh boy, am I glad that I made that decision, because Tuesday night in the bigs was a frenzy. It was a chaotic, bonkers evening. We had walk-offs. We had three homer games. We had a 300th home run. One guy had 12 hits in a row. There was a whole lot to pick through. And so what we're going to do on this episode for this segment is just pick our favorite moments. We're going to go back and forth. I'm going to go second because Jordan's older, so he gets to go first. And we're going to use that to enjoy just a normal evening in the world of baseball.
Yeah, I think this is the advantage that our sport has. I say this all the time. We talk about, baseball, how do people get excited for the regular season if there's so many games? And, you know, these other sports, there's more scarcity and each game feels more important. No. The beauty of our stupid game is how much of it is happening all of the time. And so you can just have a random Tuesday in July give you an absolute overflow of chaos. And sure, will these moments impact the grand story of the 2026 season? Probably not. But we're all just trying to enjoy what's on the TV or at the ballpark if we're lucky enough to be there in person. And it's just every night. There's just all kinds of nonsense. But this was really a special Tuesday, full slate.
And here's the thing.
Yeah, so I just want to make sure I set that stage there. Yeah.
Why is baseball doing well? Why are the Gen Zers checking back in? Maybe there was an argument that the fleetingness, the temporality of the daily moments is a perfect fit for the younger generation whose attention spans are shorter than ever. Oh my God, all this wild stuff happened yesterday. Let me scroll through it. Move on to the next. Just an idea, just a thought. Why don't you get us started, Jordan, and pick your favorite moment from Tuesday 7-7.
Yeah, favorite moment, I don't know, but it really set the tone for the evening. So let's just go for the obvious, and it is the Carson Benj Little League home run. As we know, this game, this 16-12 Royals victory over the New York Mets, it gave us plenty to pick from in this draft. But I will start with this play. And I tweeted about this, and it seems like people had some agreement here. that I really don't like the term Little League home run. Sure, you could go down the line of, oh, this is disrespectful to Little Leaguers. You know, we're making fun of Little Leaguers who are making mistakes like this. So that's
you know
one point.
And actually,
let's throw it to you there. As someone who's coached Little League. Yeah, what do you think about that as like a derogatory phrase?
A Little League home run is a ball that goes over the fence. That's a Little League home run in my book. Because Little Leaguers can go yard. They can go deep. They can pop one out, okay? Especially at the field I coached at that was 135 down the right field line. I had a policy of when a kid hit a Little League home run, like over the age of 7, they were like, I hit a home run. I'm like, well, I wasn't trying to steal dreams, but I was trying to set some realistic expectations. Do I think it's derogatory? No. Do I think we need a higher standard for this? Absolutely. And I think it needs to start with the following criteria. For it to be a Little League home run, you have to reach base on a mistake. The play at first or the pop up must be a defensive error. If you hit a single, like a good single, and then the ball's thrown around and you score, not a Little League home run, it's a single. And then, you know, a bunch of F-ups. That is why the Carson Benjamin was perfect, is that there was just... It was a never-ending flow of mistakes, and the batted ball itself was so dinky and intimidating that the fact that it led to a player scoring was remarkable.
I love that standard you said. I never really thought about it that way, but I think that's a great point. But I also push back on the ball hit to the outfielder, and they just flub it, and it gets past them. And they come all the way around to score with maybe like one sort of bad throw at the end of that play.
That's one mistake.
This one is textbook Little League home run. If we are embracing that terminology as what kind of chaos would only happen with a bunch of children. This first batted ball, essentially a swinging bunt is a little bit of a strong word. But, you know, a ball to the pitcher that Carson Benj hits, you know, to the left of the mound. Seth Lugo picks it up, throws it past the first baseman. And Jack Caglione, who's been playing a lot of first base more recently, normally in the outfield, but our pal Vinny is still injured.
Can I interrupt you here?
He hustles over to get the ball.
Let me interrupt you here.
Oh, please.
Let me interrupt you here. Two mistakes on the first play. Because Lugo throws the ball off balance unnecessarily, sidearm falling away as if he's Nick Allen or Ozzie Smith. And bad throw, but a playable ball at first. Jack Caglione could have scooped this ball. And so for this to even turn into a circus, two mistakes had to happen. Please continue.
And yet, we are only just beginning. Now, we should note that when this play begins, it's two outs with runners on first and second. So when Lugo throws it, if Cags just scoops it, the inning's over, nobody scores, right? That is, of course, not what happens. As the ball gets past him, he hustles over to pick up the ball. And this is where we really enter goofy territory. Because at this point, I believe it is A.J. Ewing who is able to come around for score. He's the lead runner. So that's one run that's in. There's really nothing you can do about that. At that point, Cags is like, ooh, maybe I can get Bo Bichette at third base. Okay, sure. Unlikely, but sure. However, his throw in that general direction is so far offline that it truly goes to nobody. It bounces around behind, sort of towards the third base dugout. Bo Bichette realizes, oh, great, I can go home. Now, here's really where I want to highlight. This is, the most underrated part of this play. Once Cags's terrible throw is picked up by third baseman Nick Lofton, if you pause it right there, Carson Benj, remember the guy who hit the ball in the first place, is still like 15 to 20 feet away from third base. If Nick Lofton just turns around and looks at third base, Bobby Witt Jr. is like, hey, just throw it right here. Bo Bichette's going to score. He's out of third. Maybe that run scores, maybe it doesn't, but you're out of the inning. Instead, Nick Lofton uncorks another bad throw towards home plate, which the catcher is unable to receive, and Carson Benj trots home for a three-run blast that didn't leave the infield. So, as we know, this play ages even better because the Royals still win the game. I did not see if they were, like, able to laugh about this after the game. I didn't see any reaction to that. Sure. But this was certainly one of the worst defensive plays of the
year.
This is
the highlight.
Throwing errors on one play.
A little justice here for Cags. I have the high home. he was actually not throwing this to third. He was throwing this to home to keep Bichette from running from third to home. I think what happened was he picked up the ball, saw Bichette was at third, and then just yeeted it. And the reason that this is the epitome of Little League home run is when you are coaching Little League, I think the most frustrating thing as a coach is when a player throws the ball to either not just the wrong base, but an inconceivable base or to an inconceivable location. That is not a place you ever throw a ball. And that, and like Caglione, just the way it looks on TV is as if, like, if I'm the Royals manager, I'm like, where are you throwing it? Which is not something that big league managers ever have to say out loud. So for me, as someone that spent a lot of time coaching little leaguers, this is the part that made me feel the most seen. That Cags was just like, yeah, just going to throw it there.
Yeah, but your point about it does seem like as he was winding up, he was kind of in between whether he should be throwing home or third, and the result was smack dab in the middle to absolutely nobody. So okay, that's the first pick. I feel great about getting that on my team for this Tuesday night draft, but let's throw it back to you.
I'll keep it in this game, man. Tyler Tolbert, a name that I'm sure few of you listeners, few of you wonderful podcast aficionados have ever heard. The Kansas City Royals might be the least relevant team in this baseball season so far, and Tyler Tolbert is not someone that has really taken center stage for the Royals. Heading into last night, I believe he had 48 plate appearances on the season. He had a 5-for-5 day on Monday, I believe, or maybe it was on Sunday. Anyway, he went 5-for-5 again last night, and that meant, Jordan, that Tyler Tolbert tied the MLB all-time record for hits in consecutive at-bats. 12 straight hits. What in the frickin' world?
Yeah, I mean, Tyler Tolbert's been in the Royals org for a while. He racked up a ton of stolen bases in the minors, made his debut last year.
He's a delight.
You know, this is a...
I've talked to him. Yeah, he's a fun chat.
Yeah, you know, 13th round pick. But this is like a right-handed hitter. This isn't someone that was like hitting 300 in the minors. I mean, he really is at no point has he been like a threat offensively. And this is what made this stretch so amazing is... First of all, the fact that he homered in back-to-back games, and that game was on Monday because we had the Phillies Royals push to Saturday to Monday because of the World Cup. So, you know, they play this home game on Monday in Kansas City, and then they go to Queens on Tuesday, kind of quick turnaround, and he's got consecutive five-hit games. That also has only happened three times or in baseball history. This is the third time in baseball history that's happened. And he was batting ninth last night. I love that, too, that he was even able to get up that many times. And just the kinds of hits that he was getting. This last hit blessed by the BABIP. Mm-hmm.
Of the 12 hits, 6 were infield hits. 1, 3, 6, 10, 11, and 12 did not leave the infield. And for the last 3 hits... to be infield hits made this even better, and it made it even funnier, and it made the Royals dugout just like cackle with glee and laughter. And Tolbert understood that he was living a charmed existence. And for it to be like a guy that, you know, we may never talk about again on this podcast to get 12 hits in a row, it fires me up.
Yeah, it's a great pick. Good for Tyler Tolbert. Unfortunately, he did fly out in his final at bat. So this streak is no longer intact. All right, let's move away from Queens. We'll see if we talk about Matt Seelinger later on. Let's go to Pittsburgh.
One last thought on that game. When teams are doing bad, as both these teams are this season, when they're doing poorly, there is really the sense of who's got it worse, right? People want to opt in to woe when your team. There's no way our team is not the worst. And so when the movable object meets the stoppable force, right, you end up with a night like this where Mets fans can go to bed last night almost feeling better, saying, wait, we are really that bad. All of my complaining, saying it has never been worse than this, is, you know, validated by a similarly woeful operation coming in and beating them. And so for Mets fans, you may not be in the best of spirits, but congrats, you are worse than the Royals.
Yeah, and I, you know, you said that this draft is like favorite things from the night. And so with that designation, I am not going to take Matt Seelinger, because his major league debut coming in a tie game in this chaos and then getting just left out there to get crushed for multiple innings, it just bummed me out. So, hey, salute to a D3 legend still becoming a major leaguer. No one can ever take that away from him. But let's go to something more positive, and let's go to Pittsburgh. I will select Ryan O'Hearn's 3-home run game. Now, 3-homer games, you know, those get sprinkled in here over the course of a season, but you got to have some real fortune to end up with a 10 RBI game. And that is what Ryan O'Hearn finished with on Tuesday night, the 17th 10 RBI game in Major League Baseball history. The first since Shohei Ohtani's famous 6-for-6 in Miami, his 50-50, you know, jamboree at the Depot. Other recent 10 RBI games include Mark Reynolds in 2018. What a fun slugger he was. Scooter Jeanette's 4-homer game in 2017. Anthony Rendon had a 3-homer game 2017 that was 10 RBIs. I remember that one against the Mets. That was 23-5. The Nats against the Mets in that one. Garrett Anderson, A-Rod. We've got a few notable names on this. But for Ryan O'Hearn, who has just been kind of going about his business as one of the real big additions to this Pirates offense that is one of the best lineups in baseball. Brandon Lau, you know, more along the all-star level production, but O'Hearn's been great. And obviously a night like this will make your batting line look even better. Now up to a 130 OPS plus in the season. But good for that guy. I mean, the Pirates have obviously had a weird stretch here, still trying to find some more momentum to get back really into the thick of the wild card race. But a night like this at home at PNC Park for an awesome dude in Ryan O'Hearn, this was really cool. So 10 RBIs in a game. Pretty cool. RBI is still cool.
RBI is still cool. You could see him giggling as he rounded the bases the final time. He's usually, you know, a pretty serious, intense dude. But he was rounding first. He was like, well, I guess this is one of those nights. I'm going to go ahead and draft snubs going off. We had some big nights from some big snubs. Brandon Lau went 3-for-5 for the Buccos last night. Bryce Terang had 2 doubles in the nightcap, including a go-ahead double. Sadon Rafaela, 2-for-5 with a homer. But we must focus on the greatest snub of all, the ultimate snub, and that is Philly's ace, Zach Wheeler. Zach Wheeler, who is not selected to the All-Star team and will not be selected as a replacement because he is going to throw on Sunday and therefore will not be available to pitch in the actual game. Zach Wheeler last night, 7 innings, 4 hits, 14 Ks, tying a career high, allowing just 1 earned run, a solo shot hit by Eugenio Suarez. This was just a reminder that Zach Wheeler is Mr. Overlooked. He is the best pitcher going that has never won a Cy Young. He has only been an All-Star 3 times. After getting a rib removed last August, thoracic outlet syndrome, questions if he would ever pitch again. I was there that day, Jordan, remember, in D.C., went down to the clubhouse. Dave Dombrowski was there saying, I got to talk to the media. We were like, what is going on? He was dour. He was serious. Zach Wheeler has thoracic outlet. We don't know what the timeline is. It was scary. Like, that was scary stuff. Zach Wheeler has made 14 starts this year, 87 innings. He has a 2.28 ERA. 2.28 ERA. Not an all-star. And he kind of went off on this last night after the game, calling it BS, calling the process, saying it pisses him off. You'd figure they'd have a clue about it by now with how many all-star games they've had. That's hilarious. It's like, yeah, it's the 96th one. They got to, you know. Trial and error. His agent, B.B. Abbott, went off to Matt Gelb over at The Athletic. Like, Wheeler feels slighted. And I'm curious about, like, how did this happen? Like, how did he get forgotten about? And I think the way it maybe happened is he was and still is below the qualifier for innings pitched. He's only thrown 87 innings. And so you have to like mess with the minimum innings on Fangraphs or MLB to like have him come up. But when you look at the numbers, like, okay, he has 87 innings. Dylan Cease, who we think is probably going to end up starting the All-Star game for the American League, has 90 innings. Like, three fewer innings. He's been 2.28 ERA. That is the sixth lowest mark in baseball. I just think for the league to not recognize the Zach Wheeler story and the journey that he had to go through getting a rib removed and to not want to have him honored at home, knowing that he was slated to start on Sunday anyway. So you just name him to the team. He gets to go. He gets to wave. Everyone's happy. And you just replace him with Jesus Luzardo at that point. And so for me, I think this was a huge swing and a miss by the league. I think someone messed up here. This was a real oversight. And I'm glad that Wheeler went out last night and was like, hey, 14 strikeouts. I'm him.
And then, right. And then I read afterwards being very clear about it. So, yeah, I totally get his disappointment. And the real unfortunate part is, you know, we just did this last year with Christopher Sanchez. And we had the story where John Middleton, Philly's owner, was like, it's fine. He's still going to get his All-Star bonus because he deserves it. It's like, Zach Wheeler don't need the money. You know, he's not
asking. It's not about the money.
He's making plenty of money. That's not the problem. He wants to be, he feels like he earned it. And I do think it's relevant. Your first point, this is someone who has already been kind of overlooked at many points along the way. Listen, he's still been paid like he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. And
sure,
he has gotten his fair share of accolades. It's not like he's never been an All-Star. But I agree with you. With it being at home, with the story, with kind of what he overcame, it's a huge whiff, and it's disappointing that they can't find a way to have him there.
If you needed somebody to start a game seven tomorrow, I think he's probably my third pick. I think so, given the playoff experience, I would take him over Mizorowski right now, which might be kind of a ridiculous thing for me to say. I understand that that's outrageous considering how good Miz is. The only two guys I would no doubt take ahead of him would be Yamamoto, considering what he did last year, and Skubal, probably.
This is a classic thing that Jake does sometimes, is he'll just throw in a very interesting question that we don't have, we were not planning on discussing, that is particularly right now a really interesting debate because of the state of Skeens, because of the state of Skubal, because of Miz, because of all these things. So maybe we'll revisit that, because I'll probably just go Yamamoto because, oh my God, you know what we watched him do last October. But it is an interesting question. Huh? I agree with you. Zach Wheeler, the all-snub ace. I, with my next pick, am going to take the opposite of an ace. And that is Cardinals utility man Brian Torres, who was pitching in the ninth inning yesterday in the second game of the doubleheader, which the Brewers were blowing out the Cardinals. More on the Brewers a little bit later. But if we're really zooming in on my favorite moments of Tuesday, let's talk about Jackson Churio, who in this game with the Brewers, with a commanding lead, facing a position player, went up to the plate and decided, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to hit left-handed. And he took the first,
you get it?
The first pitch from Brian Torres, a 34.9 mile per hour ephus, right in the zone.
A heater.
And he smoked it to center field. 98.1 mile per hour exit velocity, which is impressive both because Jackson Churio is obviously not left-handed and also because the pitch was 35 miles an hour. You have to be supplying the juice there to get to a what is considered a hard hit ball. Jackson Churio now has a 100% hard hit rate batting left-handed in the major leagues. And this is kind of exactly the kind of guy I would expect to go up there and do this and just have fun with this. I wish more guys would do this. One of the great moments honestly, it's very forgotten about and a strange contrast to how this gentleman is viewed otherwise, is when Anthony Rendon did this towards the end of his career against Brett Phillips, and he hit a home run batting left-handed. That was actually one of the last home runs that Anthony Rendon ever hit in the major leagues, as depressing as that is. And I just like, I want to see more of this because I just think it's more interesting than anything else we see with position players hitting. And also, it's a total win-win for the hitters because normally when hitters go up there facing position players, they're expected to get a hit. They're expected to hit the ball hard. But if you go up there batting from the wrong side, now everyone's laughing and they will be impressed if you're able to put a good swing on it like Jack Tenchurio did.
And it's not going to mess up your swing. When we talk about how some of these dudes are freak athletes, and like, oh, Churio, he's a different kind of inbox athlete. This is ridiculous, dude. Like being able to do this, I want all of you folks out there, pick up a pen, write with your other hand, write your name, write your own name, something you've written millions of times with your other hand. Tell me how that goes. Jackson Churio is like, yeah, I'll try it out, lefty. I'll give it a go. I'm sure he does this in BP sometimes or like in the cage just for fun, but it's just ridiculous that he's got this in the bag. Like what a... What an athlete.
Yeah. Credit to William Contreras. Apparently it was his idea and a great idea indeed.
I'm just going to take James Wood leadoff home run, his eighth of the year. The MLB single season record is Kyle Schwarber had 15 in 2024. James Wood on pace to challenge that, the all-time single season leadoff home run record. Wood is unbelievable. I just don't think we have talked about James Wood enough. He did not get the love and all-star voting that he should have. His OPS is 949, 162 OPS plus. He's leading the National League in walks. He has 25 home runs. He is striking out relatively less. He's still striking out a ton, but relatively less. This is an aircraft carrier. This is a... Like, this is a cornerstone piece. I really hope the Nats keep him around. I hope that... I don't think he's going to do the Derby this year. I wish he would do it again because I just want his star to continue to rise. But yeah, on pace to challenge the single-season home run record for leadoff homers is pretty cool.
Yeah, and this isn't to put a damper on it, but I just really... I hope that he finishes strong. I mean, James Wood last season had a 915 OPS before the break and a 690 afterwards in the second half. So he really faded. It was still an incredible season on the whole, but for him to kind of elevate into that upper tier of best players in baseball, let's see how he does in the second half. I'm not doubting him because I think this guy's unbelievable. I'm totally with you. But let's see how he can sustain it.
Last year was the first time in his life he'd played that many baseball games. I mean, he was only 22.
Sure.
I do think that as he gets older, he'll be able to sustain that better.
Totally agree. All right. I think we should finish up. Yankees, we'll spare you. You struck out a million times, but that's not that interesting. Let's finish
club
in
Los
Angeles,
for most
Jake.
Strikeouts over a two-game span. Like, that, they're the Yankees.
Not nothing.
They've been around a long time. They strike out a lot.
And Jose Caballero just dropping his bat before one of those strikeouts because I guess he thought he was going to walk. That belongs on this list for weird stuff from Tuesday. But I'm going to finish with a very simple one, and then you can wrap us up with Shohei Ohtani hitting his 300th homer. The Rockies won. Hello. I know Ohtani led off the game with a home run, but the Colorado Rockies won this baseball game. The bullpen showed up in a big way the night before they forced the Dodgers into their first extra inning game of the season and then got
walked
off.
Took them extra time.
So that, yeah, extra time. Seen plenty of that in the World Soccer Classic. Now, here's the thing, though. I'm so invested in tonight. I need to get on the board. My bold prediction before the season was that the Rockies would win a series at Dodger Stadium. It was a simple one, but one that I felt like was legitimately bold because of how awful they've been, because of how good the Dodgers are, because of how bad they've been at Dodger Stadium, all the above. They got swept in LA earlier this season already. They dropped that first game that went to extras, and I was like, oh, this isn't going to happen. But to win that game last night, to go into tonight's rubber match against Roki, I just need Roki to just start scattering it. And I just need this Rockies bullpen to show up one more time. Ryan Feltner. An Ohio boy, I'm rooting for him, and I have a chance here. I got to get on the board. You got your Giancarlo Stanton steal so early. I want to tie it up here with this bold prediction. So let's go Rockies tonight.
Roki against the Rockies as good of a window as you'll get, right? Maybe Wilkie, since his last start, had a good cry, the cry that he needed, or maybe they'll make him cry tonight. But let's finish on a high note. Shohei Ohtani, 300th home run of his career, lead off the game against the Rocks. Oh my God, Ohtani did something amazing. What a surprise. There's something different about this, though, about his 300th career home run. So much of the Ohtani conversation, so much about the wonders surrounding this singular baseball player, has been about his achievements in the micro sense, right? On a game level, on a week level, on a season level. Look, wow, he's the first guy to pitch and hit at this supreme output. Like, wow, I can't. What we have here is something different because it is, look at the body of work. Look at the longevity. Look at how long Ohtani has been doing this magical thing. Because when he has reached these heights, like so much of the conversation about it is Ohtani the GOAT? Okay, is he the GOAT? Is he the best of all time? He has been at a higher peak than anybody has ever been. Do you agree with that? Last year, NLCS, oh, yeah. Game 4 against the Dodgers, is the best a baseball player has ever been. But the difference between being the best to ever do it and the greatest of all time is sustainability, right? Is longevity. That's what separates the All-Stars from the Hall of Famers. And I think last night was our first taste of Ohtani's like Hall of Fame resume. 300 home runs on its own is not going to get anybody into the Hall of Fame. There are many people at that threshold that are not in the Hall. Ohtani is starting this next chapter of his career where we will see milestones. We will see these large achievements. I mean, Jordan, is he going to get to 300 steals at some point? You would imagine so. Ooh. He's at 171. He probably gets to 200 at some point in the next couple of years. Yeah. 300 maybe a little bit out of reach. Yeah. He's going to get to 1,500 hits at some point. Like, we're going to start to see these big numbers, which makes me feel old. Oh my God, we've been watching Shohei Ohtani forever. That's wild. But it is just an appreciation that he is now compiling, right? He is adding these up. He is piling moments upon moments upon moments upon moments so that when we look back at Ohtani's career and we see these big numbers, it is just another feather in his cap of what will be an amazing career. And so kudos to him. I did think that this swing, this homer, this milestone is really his first landmark achievement of his career. Not surprised. So it goes with Ohtani.
So the one Ohtani thing I wanted to talk about, just when we get to 300, right? we say it so fluently, oh my God, he does both. But really, let's just dig in and remember what it was like to watch pitchers hit. Okay? They were so bad. They were all so terrible. That's why we finally got rid of it and we don't really miss it. Sure, it was cool to see, you know, some guys go yard here and there.
Even the guys that you think were good at that were not good at that. Like Madison Bumgarner, who in your head probably is like, wow, he was like actually pretty good. They should have put him in the Derby.
Yeah.
Madison Bumgarner, career hitting line.
He had
172, 232, 292. He had what, 20 homers, I think? 19 home runs.
How many? Like 19 home runs. Okay. So here, that's a good transition to what I was going to talk about. So Shohei Ohtani, 300 home runs in a little like 4,700 major league plate appearances. Okay. From 2008 to 2021. So the last like decade and a half of pitchers hitting, all of the pitchers hit 287 home runs in like over 70,000 plate appearances. Okay.
Incredible.
So it's just, you know, we would get 10 to 20 a year. And it was a moment when we would get, it was fun for sure. Right. The Camarena one, the Adrian Bumgarner for sure. Greinke had a couple.
Woodruff in the playoffs.
I'm not even talking about the playoffs, right? We had a couple of big ones in the playoffs, right? But of course, those were fun. But
Bartolo.
It's just Bartolo, of course. But I don't miss it at all. And if anything, in retrospect, it now just helps make the Ohtani thing just completely, completely preposterous. But of course, I hope 301 does not come tonight as the Rockies. Oh, I mean, hey, he homered last night and the Rockies still won. So maybe they can do it. All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, we'll go around the league and finish with some all-star check-ins. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbercast.
And welcome back to a joyful episode of Baseball Barbercast. Let's go around the league. Is Tarek Skubal going to get traded? I don't know. You don't know. And honestly, no one knows. It's getting more complicated, friends, because the Tigers, the Detroit Tigers, are playing some better baseball. They are 19-12 in their last 31 games. Skubal was great again last night, went five innings against a very big struggle bus Athletics team. Just clouding the conversation about whether the game's back-to-back Cy Young Award winner will be on the move at the deadline. Jordan, what do you make of the Tigers' surge of the standings? Surge.
Yeah.
They're still nine games under.
That's the thing. 41-50 does not exactly scream contender, but plus 15 run differential now is the fifth best mark in the American League behind the three division winners and the New York Yankees. Five back in the wild card, still five teams ahead of them there. But listen, this is what Skubal said when he got back, is all we can do is win and you guys will stop asking me about getting traded. The playoff odds still sit around 25%. That has certainly gone up. I think it bottomed out at, again, in my head, it's like, oh, it must have been, for how bad they were, it must have been down at, you know, 1 or 2%. No, it only got as low as 9% on Fangraphs at the end of May because of how bad the AL is. Now it's up to 28%. And yeah, I mean, the opportunity is there to make Skubal a non-factor at the deadline. Their opportunity is also there for them to keep losing because they are still in this big hole, this nine-game under 500 hole. It also will just take another bad week for us to reignite it. So we're going to keep going back and forth on this, but they have at least, you know, I'm impressed that they've been able to rally to this degree because of how bad they've been playing for such a long period. And credit to them for taking advantage of a team like the A's, who the Tigers should be better than the A's. This should not be a hot take. That's what everyone would have said coming into the season. So if they can start taking care of business against these other teams, let me just take a quick look at the schedule for them before the deadline.
I have it in front of me.
But yeah, what
they got the A's.
Go ahead.
They got the A's, yep. Finish the series here. Then they got three against the Phillies. And then it gets pretty friendly. Angels, Cubs, Royals for four, Orioles for three, A's for three. So there is a path here for the Tigers to continue to claw their way back up the standings. Before we finish this conversation, I just have to say, Shohei Ohtani, 2023. The circumstances are a little bit different, but the outcome could be the same. At the deadline that season, the Angels were in the mix-ish, and instead of trading away Ohtani, who is going to hit free agency that winter, they added, and when they added, they mortgaged the future, and that is a big sliding doors moment for that franchise. Now, not trading Ohtani was also a business decision, I understand, proved to be a bad one. The worst case scenario here for the Tigers, and this goes without saying, is that they get too close. They get close enough where they feel like they need to hang on to Skubal, and then it all falls apart in August as the schedule does not actually get any harder. August is pretty soft as well. But that is what I don't want to see. I don't want to forego the Skubal trade discourse. Like, I would prefer either they surge up the standings and they make the playoffs with him, or they trade him and we still get him in October.
So I agree with you, but to me, the most interesting thing you just brought up there is something that right none of us were really thinking about at any point, which is just like the concept of the Tigers as buyers. And my slight pushback on the comparison there with the Angels is the Angels traded some of their like only prospects to make a push, right? Edgar Caro. And whereas in this case,
the Tigers won't do that.
Well, I don't think the Tigers will do that, but I also think that like they do have more to deal from, and I don't think it would be as risky. And in some respects, I would appreciate them kind of going forward with Scooble. Yes, if you're fast forwarding to how it unfolds, I of course agree with you. That would be a kind of a disappointing way for this to go if they like sort of go in or don't trade him and then just fall on their face over the final 2 months. Yes, for sure. But if we're just talking from a process standpoint and me just like respecting how the Tigers are operating and wanting them to act with urgency, even with this horrible start, this might still be the last Scooble run you have, then do something about that. You know, supplement this roster. Try and add some offense to this lineup that has so many hitters capable of going so ice cold. Add some bullpen help. Maybe bring another starter. I agree with you. I don't think they're wired to that degree. I think they're more likely to just ride it out. And maybe we'll criticize them for that too, you know, because we're still talking about the same thing of this might be the last few months you have with Scooble and not taking advantage of that to even get into the playoffs, let alone go for a real World Series push, would certainly be disappointing. So Tigers will certainly remain a main character, for better or for worse, over the next month. Two other topics here. Let's begin. Let's actually just do this quickly and go back to the Brewers-Cardinals. We mentioned at the start of the week that we had a unique situation because of a rainout earlier this season, that what was scheduled to be a four-game series between Milwaukee and St. Louis this week is now a five-game series, as they tacked on that extra game as a doubleheader on Tuesday. And we speculated, uh-oh, what's going to happen here? If a team takes all five of these games, we don't have nomenclature yet for the five-game sweep. And the Brewers have won the first three of these in impressive fashion. They're not quite there yet, but we're monitoring the situation, and we should probably come up with something in case they do take these next two games, which would not be surprising because the Brewers are better than the Cardinals.
Email from Ben. Hey, guys, proposing that in the rare case of a five-game sweep, it be labeled a sanitation. Something historically bad happened at your place of residence would call for extreme measures, like a full sanitation. Looking forward to what you guys come up with. Well, Ben, I think you just came up with it. I think sanitation is the right way to think about it. You're not just sweeping. You're not just mopping. You need to sanitize your floor. That is what's going on here. So we will check back in on Friday. I will say, Jordan, a member of the Brewers front office has already reached out to us to ask
whether that front office member is listening or not. And I could just, I guess, text them as well. I would wait for the fourth win before we get. Let's not get too ahead of
Jumping
ourselves.
Jumping the gun there.
Okay. So let's see. Let me look quickly. Who are our pitching matchups for the next couple days? We've got we got Kyle Harrison against Michael McGreevy. Okay, I can see the confidence level there. Although McGreevy has been solid. That's today. And then on Thursday, we've got ye old TBD, Tom Brady's dad, taking the ball for Milwaukee against Andre Pallante. But I'll say this, Jake Mintz, there's no team that I'd rather see give the ball to Tom Brady's dad than the Milwaukee Brewers, right? I mean, this is
He's been great
nobody
for them
does TBD
for years,
better
though.
Than Milwaukee. So I actually feel great about
the 2024 Tigers. They could roll out. Their TBD was dynamite. But over, yes, on the main, the Brewers are certainly the ones to pick. Let's stay in the NL Central, where there's some bad news. Connor Griffin, Pirates' young star, will be out 8 to 10 weeks with a finger sprain. It's tough, man. This sucks. He hurt it, I believe, Sunday's game against the Nationals on a slide. CJ Abrams caught his thingy. Just sucks because for Griffin, like when we have this like mega prospect come up, we either want to see them succeed or show promise or fail. And like if you're grading Connor Griffin's freshman year, you just have to give him an incomplete. you can't really evaluate it just because of the injuries that he's had.
Yeah. I mean, this sucks so much because of how good he looked since he got back from the arm injury. He had some sort of kind of minor elbow injury that was preventing him from throwing. He couldn't play shortstop. But I mean, I think what we saw over the first little stretch of Connor Griffin was like, okay, well, obviously he fits as an athlete. We'll see how productive. Can he be one of the Pirates' best players immediately? I didn't necessarily expect that, but we were already starting to see it. And that's why we're talking about one of the best prospects we've seen in quite some time. And now the Pirates just can't afford this. I mean, it's that simple. How it impacts their deadline plans. This is a team that has, you know, gotten out of last place. They're two games above 500. They've won three in a row. They have that plus 41 run differential that tells you they're a good ball club, but more work to do. Fortunately, they have other offensive, you know, options for sure that can help them score runs. But Griffin's just such a game changer, particularly on the bases, that's the element that this team is really going to be lacking now. I mean, there's really not anyone else. Like Lau, O'Hearn are obviously not giving you that whatsoever. Nick Gonzalez is not giving you that whatsoever. O'Neill Cruz, their other speed threat, is still injured. Jake Mangum can give you that, but he's not exactly an everyday player. So we'll see how this impacts the Pirates. I still hope that they add at the deadline in some form, certainly add to the bullpen. Are they going to go get a shortstop? I doubt it, but this just sucks. And I hope that he could come back and the Pirates are still in it. That is really what I'm hoping for, because that could be one of the more exciting, you know, storylines of September, is Connor Griffin coming back.
Let's take a break. And when we return, some all-star news, replacements, derby inclusions, and AL NL imbalance. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. We got some all-star news, something we need to talk about. We're less than a week out from the Home Run Derby. It is Wednesday morning. The Home Run Derby is in 5 days, and we don't have a field. We have two confirmed participants as of 10:05 a.m. Eastern Time. Junior Caminero, we knew about. We talked about on Monday. Ben Rice has thrown his hat into the Derby ring. No Yankee has won this event since 2017, when Aaron Judge wowed the world with his showcase in Miami at what was then Marlins Park. No free ads for Lone Depot. Ben Rice in the Derby. He has cooled off recently. I know he went deep last night. Jordan, what do you make of this one?
Yeah, I think Ben Rice, who had kind of been slumping big time at the end of June, has really picked it back up. Four homers in his last seven games. And I mean, listen, and not that everyone's going to go out of their way and then root for a Yankee, but it's an awesome story. I mean, Ben Rice is, and he'll remain a main character, and we'll talk about him plenty, but the Home Run Derby is always a great opportunity to elevate your status even further. And even for someone who's become an important player for the New York Yankees, I still think that he's someone that can, his story and just his development as a slugger is one that should still probably be told more to the national audience. And I think this is a great opportunity for that to happen. And I'm glad that he is, that he's embracing this chance and going for it. So well-deserved. And
Ben Rice, yeah,
we'll see how he does.
Remember, 12th round pick out of Dartmouth in the Home Run Derby. It's ridiculous. friend of the program, John Becker over at Fangraphs, has a very helpful Home Run Derby tracker. No one tracks anything like John Becker. Caminero and Rice are the two guys that have been confirmed. Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper, I'll say it right now, I would be floored if they were out. Schwarber has said he's in if his back feels fine. I think he will end up doing it. Harper said he's in if he can find a pitcher, which is like the funniest thing ever. Bryce, like, come on. Because he said his dad's not going to do it because his dad doesn't really throw BP anymore. It's like, okay, Bryce, I think there are a couple of people that would throw to you at the Derby. I think you'll find a pitcher. So in my mind, that's four spots taken: Caminero, Rice, Schwarber, and Harper. Hunter Goodman, Jordan Walker, Wilson Contreras, all all-stars that said they would do it if asked. Of that three, I would say Contreras is the most likely, then Walker, then Goodman. I think in the league's mind, Hunter Goodman, respectfully, he's Hunter Goodman, really good. What's the difference between him and Cal Raleigh last season? Less than you think. However, the league's probably not jumping to get Hunter Goodman in the Derby. Juan Soto and James Wood have both said, we'll see. My prediction, Jordan, Caminero, Rice, Schwarber, Harper, Walker, Contreras, Soto, and then someone we're not expecting quite yet. Someone we haven't thought about.
So you think Soto will do it? I that's what I'm holding out for. Like I do
he can
want
use the money.
Soto to be, yeah. He
you get a million if you win.
He's gunning for that extra $1 million.
I was joking with friend of the program yesterday, Astros slugger Taylor Trammell. We were talking about the Derby. Mm. He goes, I'll do it for half. I'll do it for 500.
I love Taylor Trammell. I think those are good picks. You kind of glossed over it there, but I guess we had mentioned it. Wilson Contreras, all-star, one of the top snubs. He does get added, replacing Vlad Jr. as we expected. And I think him in the Derby would also be great and well-deserved. I liked Wilson Contreras saying that when he got the call about this, he assumed it was an update about his suspension. And instead, they were telling him he was an all-star. So it would have been funny if MLB announced his suspension and him being out at the all-star game at the same time. Seems like they decided to not do that. But I think I agree with you. You've named the right guys that should be in the mix there. And we'll see how it runs. I would not be surprised if we have another name by the time people are listening to this podcast.
The other one I want to see is CJ Abrams. I don't know how good he would be at it just because of the way his power plays. But if we're talking about players that I think should kind of get elevated on that stage, that would be cool. I think he's definitely on that list, especially now that Kurtz has said no. Other news from All-Star Land, Byron Buxton is hurt. He went on the IL. He will be out of the All-Star game. That is unfortunate. We have already had that one replacement with Contreras hopping in. We will need one for Aaron Judge. And now we will need one for Byron Buxton, who I believe finished second among all outfielders in the American League in voting. Jordan, who are some American League outfielders on your radar that you think could replace Buxton and Judge?
Oh, man. Honestly, I have not looked at this. When I was doing my snubs, who did I have on the all-snub team? I had Jung-Hoo Lee, who Rafaela. Is, of course, not in the American League. Rafaela is a good one. I don't think I included him because I was trying to do one from diversify the teams, and I'd already done Contreras. But yeah, in the American League, I imagine that is a pretty good one. Julio's not really on. I mean, he's there war-wise, but I don't think he's on that level. Rafaela, yeah. I
would and remember,
Rafaela.
Mike Trout also has not played in quite a while. His all-star status is still up in the air. So we're in a situation now where all three all-star starters in the outfield could get replaced. A group that was already pretty weak. Like, American League outfield was pretty shallow to begin with for a variety of different reasons. And so I think Randy got hit in the elbow last night. It seems like he's going to be okay, but...
Dude, Randy gets hit literally every game. That is not relevant. He will be not there.
Randy, saying there's a chance that the outfield could be Riley Green, Cody Bellinger, and Randy Arozarena.
Yes.
With zero subs.
I think Trout's
going to play nine.
I think Trout's going to play. I will say this. It sounds like Trout is going to try to play. He's certainly going to be there. Maybe this opens the door for the first Brandon Nimmo All-Star game. Now, again, it's like... It would be it's such a weak crop. He's got a 106 WRC plus. Like, he's been good, but I mean, to say he's been an all-star would be a stretch. But
Sam Antonacci. Agree with you, right?
I mean, Rafaela is probably the most deserving in terms of everyday players. He's, yeah, Antonacci, your guy Antonacci, but Rafaela's, you know, got 15 games played ahead of him. So, and is a much better defender. Yeah.
Michael, like I said last pod, put Michael Harris on the AL team, let him play center field.
Do we have to have an outfielder? I don't know.
At least one.
To your point, right. Just
at least one. Like, Like you have, you know, when you, in Little League or in men's league, when you need an extra guy, when you only have eight and the other team just gives you an outfielder.
You know what? Kevin McGonigal, hustle on out there, big guy.
Go play left. You can do it. Hey, this Dylan is a ridiculous Dingler, thing.
Dylan Dingler played center field in college. Let's put him out there.
Okay. I mean, it. Wow. Tristan Peters?
I like my Carlos Dingler Cortez, idea, actually. I'm all in on that one. Cody Although you probably Clemens? Don't want to take your catcher out.
Randall Grichuk. I mean, like, this is a fascinating situation bleak. With how weak it
it's
is.
It's bleak. It's bleak.
I would have said Jack Caglione until he, you know, embarrassed himself yesterday. But I think that this conversation is kind of a part of a longer conversation about the imbalance between the American League and the National League that we're seeing this year.
Sure.
The best players in the AL are like all hurt. Here are all stars over the last couple of years that we don't have this season. Aaron Judge hurt. Jose Ramirez, who's been at 7 of the last 8 All-Star games, hand surgery. Cal Raleigh missed a month, played through an injury. He's reduced. Roman Anthony wasn't an All-Star last year. Probably could have been ascending superstar. Hasn't played since May 4th. Jeremy Pena missed a bunch of time. I think he's out right now. Buxton won't be there with an injury. Mikel Garcia is out with an injury. Corey Seager, as usual, out with an injury. Then on the pitching front, Garrett Crochet hasn't thrown since April. Tarek Skubal missed 6 weeks. Max Fried has been out for a while. Hunter Brown missed some time. Carlos Rodon is out again. We have down years from Vlad Guerrero Jr., Gunnar Henderson, decline from Jose Altuve, Jacob deGrom, and then an enormous exodus of top players going from the AL to the NL over the last handful of seasons. Juan Soto, Shohei Ohtani, Kyle Tucker, Rafael Devers, Bo Bichette, Alex Bregman have all gone to the senior circuit. And so what you're left with is just this total dearth, this paucity of players, of established megastars on the AL side, of the top 10 finishers in AL MVP voting from last season. Just two, Bobby Witt Jr. and Junior Caminero. Bobby Witt Jr. Caminero are going to be at the All-Star game. On the pitching side, none of the top six finishers in AL Cy Young from last year will be at the All-Star game. That was Skubal, Crochet, Hunter Brown, Max Fried, Brian Wu, Carlos Rodon. And it's just a really stark gap between the two teams. Now, this plays into what we talked about earlier in the season, where the AL was just a mess and the NL was kicking its ass in interleague play. Are these two things related? I think they are somewhat. If you compare it to the NL side, where there are a lot more established stars that are going to be back in Philly. Now, the upside to look at this, right, is, well, this is an opportunity for younger players to take that stage, to announce themselves to a national audience, for Junior Caminero and Nick Kurtz and Kevin McGonigal to kind of take that next step and become more established names. But it does certainly create, you know, you look at the lineup and for the AL and you're like, huh, well, could this team beat the Dodgers?
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. And just looking at it, depending on who gets added, I could see our pal Ernie Clement handling left field for the last few innings. He hasn't played a ton of outfield over the last couple of years, but he's certainly done it before. And John Schneider, the manager, of course, might just be like, Ernie, do me a solid. I'm not going to make Bazzano or McGonigal run out there. Just, and also, like, Ernie Clement, you will play all 9 innings of this All-Star game because it's awesome and you deserve it. So, yeah, so maybe that will happen.
Is there, like, a legend pick? You know, like how Manfred had Harper as the legend pick so they could just... Is there, like, an old outfielder?
Ichiro?
That they... Ichiro, if we were in Seattle, I mean, he'd play. People would rather see Ichiro than Riley Green.
Yeah, like what's Shane Victorino up to? Can we get him out there?
Nick Castellanos.
All right. Oh, that is funny. I like that idea a lot. All right, one more All-Star thing before we say goodbye. The Futures game is on Sunday afternoon at noon on NBC. This is an event that we used to cherish to a very high degree unfortunately, the league, in the way that it has scheduled it, the way that it has promoted it, the way that it has shrunk it to seven innings, it has made it just feel like less of a priority. However, they are still doing it, and that still means that many of the top prospects in baseball will be there on All-Star Weekend, and we will be there on Sunday to watch this seven-inning exhibition game. And it's still cool because you still get to see a bunch of these awesome minor leaguers on the same field at the same time. It's kind of the same thing that I appreciate about going to the draft combine, which is you understand the physicality of a lot of these prospects compared to
what does this look like
in Omaha too. Yeah. What does this look like? Like, you, maybe you see videos of these guys or you'll see clips, but to see like the top shortstop prospects next to each other, you start to be like, okay, that's why that guy's ranked higher, because he's clearly more projectable. Or you see a guy that's actually not that big and he's, you know, crushing the ball in BP, and you become more impressed. Futures game BP, the futures game, can still offer us a little glimpses into what the next wave of talent is in Major League Baseball. And that is not an insignificant opportunity. And this year's rosters certainly give plenty of players for us to be excited about. So if you want to just name a couple that you're excited to see,
sure,
go ahead, and I'll do the same before we say goodbye.
I have three. One is Jesus Madé, who is the top prospect in all of baseball, shortstop for the Brewers. I just want to see what this looks like. This guy is being hailed as a generational offensive talent. He is not, you know, when you watch the videos, he is not that physical. But he's just a preposterous in-box athlete with bat speed, feel for the barrel, et cetera, et cetera. I just want to see this guy move around. I believe he was there last year, but want to spend a little bit more time kind of focusing on the Madé situation. And then there are two guys who I have seen in various moments of my life that I'm excited to see on this stage. Ralphie Velasquez, first base prospect for the Guardians, and Miguel Cime Jr., pitching prospect for the Nationals. I ran into a 16-year-old Ralphie Velasquez at the airport coming home when I was coming home from the 2022 All-Star Game in L.A. He was like, had a glove and was sitting next to me at a restaurant. And I was like, you play? He's like, yeah, you know, I play a little, doing the perfect game stuff. I was like, oh, pretty cool. What's your name? Oh, I'm Ralphie Velasquez. I was like, oh, that's cool. Now he's, you know, maybe the best first base prospect in the league. And so, like, I don't think I've seen him in person since then, or at least focused on him in person since then. I'm excited to see what the physicality looks like. And then Miguel Cime Jr., who's from New York, who I saw long tossing in a park when he was in high school. Like, I want to see him throw gas. If you're looking at who could throw the hardest pitch in this game, I think Miguel Cime Jr. is the pick.
I think it's him. You know, Seth Hernandez, the top Pirates pitching prospect, will also be on that list. If Liam Doyle's really airing it out, I could maybe see that as well. And yeah, those are great ones. I don't know if you're leaving out the detail about Ralphie that really gave it away, or if that was on purpose or not. The old Boris backpack. That's how you know that's a good young ball player. Ralphie is indeed a Boris client, and has been for some time. Ralphie rakes. I'm so excited. I mean, I don't know if he's going to get to the big leagues this year, but he is a very exciting hitter that I'm excited to see in the big leagues. If I was going to name one other hitter who I'm excited to see take batting practice, give me Dakota Jordan of the San Francisco Giants. Dude. He ended up being drafted way later. Like, he was on my top 50 a couple years ago out of Mississippi State. He didn't go until the fourth round. A lot of swing and miss concerns. But he's having a nice season, and that's another guy that, just from a physicality standpoint, there ain't a lot of baseball players built like him. He is indeed a former football player, and it looks like it. So
I'm going to say something
cool to see him succeed.
Irrational,
and yeah.
In a way, he's the closest thing we've had to Bo Jackson. He's not remotely that talented at either of the sports he played. I understand that, but if you're talking about the type of like physical athlete and the way that his baseball game is going to play, tons of swing and miss, outrageous power, speed in the outfield, like, the best version of Dakota Jordan looks like Bo Jackson's production in the big leagues. Now, I know people are going to say, you don't understand what Bo Jackson was. You don't understand. I get it. There's only one Bo Jackson. I understand. He jumped over a Volkswagen. I'm just saying that, like, there are some parallels here with Dakota Jordan to watch.
Yes. All right. We will wrap it there. I will have my top 50 draft prospects coming out tomorrow, I believe. Very much looking forward to getting that off my 50. Plate. I'm very excited. Oh, bottom 50 prospects.
My bottom 50 draft prospects. The dudes you don't want to take.
Love that.
On there.
So
you and I
don't think you'll be seeing any. Yeah, that's true. You don't seem to think you'll be seeing any of those guys picked on Saturday. We will have a lot more draft conversation on Friday leading into round one on Saturday afternoon. But you can look out for that. I'm very excited to have that out in the world. Otherwise, thank you all for listening. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. I will be in Philadelphia by the next time we talk. You can email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Jake Mintz, take us home.
An apology to the English and the British and the Scottish for my mangling of your various national identities. An unacceptable mistake. Honestly, I'm not even doing a bit here. We received a lot of feedback on this. Thank you for being kind and attempting to educate me. I am embarrassed. I consider myself, you know, a patron of history, a follower of the real world. As someone that read Patrick Radden Keefe's Say Nothing twice, I should definitely know the difference between the Brits, the Scottish, the Northern Irish, the Irish, the Welsh. And I erred in the last episode. But I think we can all agree. Actually, you know what? You know what we can't agree on? That football's coming home.
We'll see. Erling Haaland might have something to say about that. We will see how the World Soccer Classic unfolds. Oh yeah, what a way to go out.
Team USA in the Baseball World Cup, as we call it, they should adopt a football's coming home attitude. Like, that would be funnier to me if they were like, we invented this, we need to win it, right? Like, that is how the English think about the World Cup. Like, we made this sport. We gave it to the world. You're welcome. That type of superiority complex is way more interesting than like Claymore jokes, you know, and military salutes. So that is just a thought.
Agree with there. That.
Mark DeRosa, if you're listening, baseball's coming home. 2030 or whatever.
I agree with that last point for sure. But yeah, what was more embarrassing? What, them against Belgium or Team USA baseball against Brazil? It's an interesting, you know.
The soccer team against Belgium. The soccer, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, it was so
We're not footy knowers.
Bad.
We're not footy knowers. Tough scene, dude. Tough.
Yeah. Well, you can look out for more expert footy analysis on the Yahoo Sports MLB YouTube channel. Oh my goodness, we got our own channel, folks. So come support us, the Yahoo Sports MLB YouTube channel. That's where you can find all things Baseball Barbercast.
Make Do sure it, please.
You go subscribe. Go subscribe.
Please.
We're done.
I have mouths to feed.
We will see you all.
Just mine.
Goodbye.